recorded for many hours, sometimes more than 12 hours. I remember on one occasion when I was brought back to myself from one of these lengthy sessions, I couldn't figure out for a long time whether it was morning or night. Anyway, Darlene herself told me that because she was blindfolded during her interrogation, she couldn't see who was present in the room. But at the end of each session, she could tell by the sound of chairs that there had been many people in the room. On one occasion, she recalled how the interrogator and several others had a lengthy discussion about religion with her, and when they found themselves incapable of arguing with her decisive answer, into tears, saying, "Whether you accept it or not, I am a Baha'i, and you can never take it away from me. I am a Baha'i with all my heart and being." It was due to such charisma that her interrogator once told her, "They should have given you a degree in public speaking instead of literature." In prison, she was always a solace to all the other prisoners. She used to say, "Martyrdom is not a gift that is given to just anyone. One must yearn for it in one's heart." And indeed, she was telling the truth, for she herself yearned for such a strength from the bottom of her heart. Zarin was arrested with her father and mother at midnight on October 23, 1982. Her mother was released very soon, but her father is still in prison today. She was martyred on June 18, 1983, along with 9 other Baha'i women. Zarin had written many beautiful articles, and I would like to read you a part of something she wrote herself so you can better understand her feeling. But before I read it, I should tell you about the circumstances in which it was written. When Zarin was a member of the youth committee, during one of the meetings, the telephone rang and one of the committee members was summoned immediately to the prison to visit his father for one last time. He rushed to the prison with his family and found his father waiting to say goodbye. His father said, "This is our last visit and I will now leave you all for the abode of my beloved." So they embraced each other one last time, and after the visit was over, with utmost firmness and calm, the son took the rest of the family home and returned to the committee meeting, which was still going on. After hearing what had happened, the meeting adjourned with prayers and meditations. Zarin, who was recording the minutes, wrote the following. The 88th meeting of the youth committee started with a prayer at 5:15 p.m. This 88th meeting on March 17, 1981 had the undeserved privilege of entering into the heart of history and beholding its crimson beat. If we bowed our heads in thanksgiving at the exalted threshold of his glory for the rest of our lives, and if every atom of our being resounded with praise and gratitude, we can never be deserving of such an honor. What made these mere specks of dust, these insignificant beings, these broken winged birds in the swamp of idle fancies and vain imagining, so deserving as to be allowed by the blessed beauty to witness a glimpse of the glory of the greatest event in history? It was as though the dwellers of the unseen kingdom were taking hold of our hands and separating us from our administrative involvement, which in our thoughtless mind had appeared as a form of service. It was as if they were whispering in our ears, "Now, behold the glory of the ancient beauty, the essence of service, the meaning of steadfastness, courage, heroism, and at last behold martyrdom. Oh my God, how could this be true? I had only heard of such acts of self-sacrifice through the historic tales of Nabi. I had always thought that to understand the meaning of martyrdom meant traveling 137 years backward in time. And then suddenly he ordained otherwise, and I witnessed the mystery of sacrifice. The 88th meeting of the Youth Committee had the honor of having the son of a martyr in its midst. These events ought to be recorded with a crimson pen and inscribed in the golden pages of history. The 88th meeting of the Youth Committee never really ended. In fact, it was only the beginning for this new generation of Baha'is who had heard of the grandeur of the cause of Baha'u'llah but had not seen it. A generation who had read the legends of sacrifice but had not touched them. It was a beginning for the future generation of Baha'is who would read about these illustrious martyrs of Shiraz and learn that no water can put out the flame of his love, that no tempest can extinguish the fire of his affection. Another martyr of Shiraz was my very dear friend, Shaheen Darband, with whom I had spent most of my time during the few years before our imprisonment. Everyone used to call her Shirin, which means sweet. She had a very innocent, shy, and kindly face. She was also talented and intelligent, a graduate in sociology from the University of Shiraz. One of her professors said that Shirin's thesis for graduation had been so outstanding that other professors frequently quoted from it. Although they knew that she was a Baha'i, they often singled her out as one of their exceptional students. Shirin and I began our administrative service at the same time. First, we were both members of the teaching committees and then youth events committee. Then we served on the children's and Baha'i education committee for several years. Later, Shirin became a member of the youth committee and was devoted to it. She loved her activities in the faith so much that no matter how much her family and friends insisted that she leave Shiraz, she wouldn't do so. Her family was living in England at that time, and she lived along with her grandparents in Shiraz. She continued to serve on various committees until her last days. I remember the one time she expressed the wish to be in England when her father wrote her about the visit of hand of Qaz Ruhiya Khanum. With tears in her eyes, she said, "How lucky for my family. I wish I were in England now, Ruhi, so I could visit with Ruhiya Khanum too." She was in love with nature, especially flowers, and she always used to keep flowers in her room and used to say, "Flowers are a sign of purity." She also loved the sea very much, and we used to go to the beach together every Friday. Her love for handicrafts and paintings, especially traditional Persian miniatures, was an obvious sign of her interest in old Persia. For a long time, we both had intuitions about being arrested and even talked about it. I remember once joking to her, "We should always put on our warm-ups when we are at home, so we'll be ready when they come to take us." On the day of our arrest, November 29, 1982, she came to my home around lunchtime and we spent a few hours together. Later, we decided to visit the family of one of the Baha'i prisoners. All afternoon we talked only about the prison, and Shirin seemed unusually calm and quiet. Towards evening, as we were returning home, she was followed by a revolutionary guard. We didn't think much of it, since it was such a common occurrence. That evening, as we sat together, we started knitting, and I suddenly said to Shirin, "I hope we won't have to finish our knitting in the prison." She was noticeably impatient that night and put aside her knitting. At one point she said, "I am tired. We had better go to sleep." It was after 11 o'clock at night when our doorbell rang. Shirin, my sister, and I all got up together and said, "They have come for us." Without any hesitation, I took hold of Abdul Baha's picture, kissed it, and said, "Please help us, Abdul Baha." Then I gave it to Shirin, and she did the same. I felt quite relaxed after that. It was my father who opened the door. 7 or 8 guards entered the house and searched all the rooms. They put us each in separate rooms and started questioning us individually. The first question was, "Are you Baha'i?" When we said yes, they asked, "Will you convert to Islam?" We said, "No, we will not lie about our faith." After a while, the guard who was questioning Shirin came out of the room she was in. Through the doorway, I could see by her tearful eyes that she was trying to let me know that they were taking her away. I smiled at her and said, "Me too." A smile appeared on her innocent face when she understood that she was not alone. It took the guards about 2 hours to search the house and gather up all our Baha'i books and pictures. Then they told Shirin and me to go with them to prison. We took a few of our personal belongings and said goodbye to my family. Shirin asked my sister to kiss her grandmother for her and turn her family not to worry about her. She also took off her jewelry and left it with my sister. It was as if she knew that she would not be coming back. My mother was especially distressed by Shirin's arrest and kept pleading with the guard not to take her away, since she was a guest in our house. But the guard didn't pay any attention and only replied, "Her name is on the list. Therefore, she must come with us." Then my mother asked if she could chant a prayer before they took us. They agreed, and we all stood by while she recited it. There was a silence and a special atmosphere in the room. After that, I embraced my mother and told her, "Don't worry." I said, "We should be confident that not even a leaf falls from a tree unless it be by the will of God." My father was very calm. He even made some tea and offered it to the guards. However, since they considered Baha'is to be unclean in Persian Najas, they refused the offer. After we reached the prison, we were searched and files were made on us. It was around 3 o'clock in the morning when we were taken to the cell. The first person to greet us there was Mrs. Ashraqi, who embraced and welcomed us. Shirin and I couldn't sleep anymore and talked the rest of the night. She was terribly worried about her grandparents. She said, "In a way, I am glad they arrested me in your home, because I would never have been able to say goodbye to my poor grandmother. But I wish I could have said goodbye to her the way I wanted to." Shirin's birthday coincided with the visitor's day on Saturday. That day, she was extremely sad and seemed immersed in thoughts of her family. She was a very sensitive girl, so much so that she had kept all the birthday cards her family had ever sent her. Every year on her birthday, she would look at the cards and recall her past memories. That day, she did the same thing, walking up and down the hallway of our cell, which was only about 3 meters long and 1.5 meters wide. That evening, when they delivered our packages, Shirin was surprised to receive a new towel and a dress from her grandmother. She cried bitterly and that night and was missing her family, especially her mother, terribly. That night, she was under terrible pressure. She held my hands as we lay in bed and said, "Mother, Mother, I heard her voice, Ruhi. I'm not mistaken. I'm sure it was her voice." I gripped her hand tightly and held her head against me. We cried together for a long time. Shirin was taken for interrogation on several successive days, along with other dear Baha'i friends. Each time, they would keep her for many hours. She said that between the questioning, whenever there was an opportunity, she would recite this prayer by Abdul Baha and ask for help. "He is the All-Glorious, O my beloved Baha. Grant us thine assistance and thy confirmation. We are grieved, thou art the sea of fire. We are withered, thou art the life-giving breeze. Bestow upon us thy bounty and mercy.